This is the Rick Edelman Show.
I am extremely excited to bring onto the program for this hour Dr. Ken Dykewald, PhD. Ken has been on this show many times in the past, and you know him well. He is the founder and CEO of AgeWave, focused on the social and business implications and the opportunities of aging and our rising longevity. Ken's client list includes half the Fortune 500. He has twice received the American Society on Aging Award for Outstanding Leadership. American Demographics called him the single most influential marketer to baby boomers over the past quarter century. And he was named by Investment Advisor as one of the 35 most influential thought leaders in the financial services industry for the past 35 years. And last year, in 2020, he was the first person to ever receive the new Pioneer Award from the Retirement Coaches Association. Ken, thanks so much for joining us once again on the program.
Always good to be with you, Rick.
I want to acknowledge this omission, and I want you to react and respond to this. We have devoted our lives, our careers here at Edelman Financial Engines, to helping our clients prepare for retirement financially, how to make money, how to save money, how to invest money, how to manage that money, and ultimately distribute it to family and heirs upon their passing. What I now realize I didn't do over these past 36 years is provide much assistance in anticipating what they're going to do with their lives once they have, in fact, left that career at age 62 or 65 or what have you. Now, back in the day, it wasn't an issue for my grandfather, but for us, we're retiring still under that old methodology, retiring in our 50s and 60s. But today we have life expectancies of another 20, 30, 40 years. And nobody's ever really talked about that to me. I've not talked about it with my clients. So share with me your reaction to that.
Yeah, you know, I was reading Michener's Hawaii again recently. He wrote it in 1959. And the first pages of it, Rick, he describes how tectonic plates were grinding against each other deep below what we now think of as Polynesia. And until after enough of that went on, came rising up these gorgeous islands. And as you well know, for 100,000 years now, we have been trying to have an impact on health and disease and allow more people to live long lives. And guess what? It's happening. And so exactly as you say, that when our grandparents reached retirement age, they were pretty amazed to know that they had lived that long and were just kind of appreciative of that. And they knew they might have a couple of years of wind down before, you know, their batteries expired. Our parents' generation, they began to have a little bit of time, maybe 10 years they imagined their retirement would be, and they kind of viewed it as a vacation. That was the idea of retirement. If you like going fishing, well, then you'll have more time to go fishing. If you like golf, you'll have more time to play golf. And if you like to walk on the beach, you'll have walk on the beach time, round the clock, 24/7, 365 days a year. But you landed on it, and you and Gene are right in the middle of it now, which is that, wait a minute, if you're in your early 60s, and for one reason or another, you're kind of shifting yourself out of a career, you literally, Rick, I mean, you may only have a week in your life, but you may have 35 years in front of you. What the heck are you going to do with yourself? And it's not just a matter of how am I going to fill my time. By the way, last year, the average retiree watched 47 hours of television a week. So that's not so great. So let's think big for a second. Let's think Edelman-like. If you knew that you're going to have 30 or 35 years of life and you have the smarts that you have and the wealth that you've accumulated and an intact and loving relationship and big ideas about all sorts of things from technology to exponential thinking to longevity to Alzheimer's disease to blockchain and cryptocurrency, if you knew all of that, what might you turn yourself into in the years to come? And what I want to tell you is that, you know, there's 70 million people today in America who are retired, and every day 10,000 more retire. And this is a highly educated, highly motivated generation of people. And I think a lot of people are scratching their heads and saying, wow, who am I going to be next? And how does one reinvent oneself? And how do you figure out if you want to work full-time or part-time? And does it matter if you're getting paid? Because there's a lot of pro bono and volunteer opportunities that could really change the world. So this question of what's a financial advisor to do, which you mentioned, I think in the years to come, financial advisors will not only talk to you about your money, but your life. Or there's going to be universities and academies and summer camps so that people can reinvent themselves in their retirement years, because you have a lot of people now heading into a period of life that never really existed before that offers incredible opportunity, and yet most people aren't sure what to make of it.
The work that we're doing at Stanford's Center on Longevity and at the Milken Institute, Ken, you're along with me on the advisory board at their Institute on the Study of Aging. And it is commonly acknowledged within the experts of this field, including you, Ken, that people alive in 2030 are highly likely to be living to age 100 and potentially even longer than that. So if you're retiring at 60, 65, you're really barely in middle age. And we haven't prepared anybody for that fact because it's such a new phenomenon. And so, Ken, what is it that people need to do, to start doing, to rethink what their future is likely to all be about?
First of all, it's a fantastic opportunity we all have. I mean, some of your listeners might think, oh, no, what am I going to do with all that time? And am I going to have enough money? And do I like living where I'm living? And is my marriage the one I want to be? I mean, you know what? Those are all real questions. And it's sort of amazing that we are the first humans really in history, en masse, to be able to contemplate the idea of what to do with this longer life. I'll give you an example. When John Glenn, decades ago, announced that he was going to go back up into space at 77, I was asked if I would provide commentary on one of the networks. And I did. But right before that, I watched him be interviewed. And a lot of the young reporters were saying, hey, don't you think you're a little old for this? What happens if you have a heart attack? How come you're not puttering around the house? And Glenn turned to these reporters, and he was a tough guy. I knew Glenn. He turned to these reporters and he said, hey, just because I'll be 77 doesn't mean I still don't have dreams.
Wow.
And Rick, I got to tell you, when I heard him say that, I thought, you know what? I think a lot of us think only young people have hopes and dreams. And then by the time you're 40 or 50, you either achieved them or you didn't. And then you go to the sidelines. What Glenn was sort of signaling was that era is over. And that if you can still have new dreams when you're 62. You can want to write your first book when you're 71. If you're widowed or divorced, maybe you're going to fall in love and have the love of your life. Or maybe you are kind of a low-key worker, but you've always had an idea and you want to become an entrepreneur at 65. And I think we're about to see the new frontier is not, I know, how quickly Jeff Bezos can deliver groceries to our home, which is, that's a pretty great accomplishment. I think the new frontier is going to be seeing what 60 and 65-year-olds make of themselves with all of their emotional intelligence, all of their connections, and all of their years in front of them. And frankly, I feel the same about you and Gene. You're a singular guy, Rick. I mean, who else on this planet has had their finger on the pulse of the economy, of people, of investing, and have tried to do good while you're doing well? And now you reach a point in your life where you know more than you've ever known before, and you've got health and power like you've never had before. And so I would hope, as your friend and as an admirer and as a fan of your teachings, to think, oh, I hope you don't just sort of wind it up, because you've reached the top of your game. One of the big, I would have to say, dumb mistakes we make in this country is we take people when they're at the top of their game and then we move them to the sidelines. And I mean, that's just plain foolish. Now, I think young people are great. They got great energy. They're attractive. They come up with cool new ideas. But honestly, if you think that you can just sort of move 60-year-olds to the sidelines because that's what we did in the 1950s, you're missing the future. I do want to say one other thing about this, and you touched on it. My kids are now 31 and 34. By the way, both fans of Rick Edelman. When they were coming through high school, there was a huge amount of attention placed on, okay, do you want to go into the military? Do you want to start a job? Do you want to go to college, small college, big college? How are you going to pay for it? What are you going to study? There were counselors. There were visits. There was a lot of drama. And then they made the decision, and if it didn't work, you could transfer just for 4 years. So here are guys like you and I, or our friends and wives and loved ones. You could be 60 or 63, and you might have 35 years in front of you. There's no counseling program. There's no college. There's no course to take on what to make of this next chapter of your life. And I think that's a big, glaring hole that needs to be filled.
And that is exactly the issue, is that we haven't prepared anybody for this. At Edelman Financial Engines, a big internal focus now is on the development of life planning services to our clients, not merely financial planning, for exactly this reason, that life doesn't end when the career ends, when the job ends. So many of us are our work, and our lives revolve around our work. Our social network revolves around our coworkers and colleagues in the profession that we are in. Where we live, all tied in with all of that. And yet when the work piece is gone, when that paycheck is gone and the employment is gone, we're kind of left in a vacuum because we never contemplated that there needs to be a there to replace what has been lost. You know, there's got to be a there. What I want you to elaborate on, Ken, because we've talked about this so many times offline, the reason that society doesn't really do much to help people prepare for the next chapter of their lives. Talk about Madison Avenue's regard for old people.
Oh, boy, we're getting into some fun stuff here. First, let me start where you just ended. So we live in a culture that's there's a lot more attention over this last few years on our various isms, our ignorance, our discrimination, our prejudices. And one of those is, let's call it ageism, which is a word that was coined in the 1970s by the founder of the National Institutes on Aging, who happened to be my mentor, a guy named Robert Butler, who called it a psychiatric disorder. It was a discomfort with older people and a discomfort with one's own aging process. So when we had the baby boomers come along after World War II, not only did this massive bunch of us arrive, but also modern marketing as we know it. I was looking this up the other day that in 1946, when the first boomer arrived, there were only 6,000 television sets in all of America. And then TV took off. And then all of a sudden, you could start marketing to 5-year-olds and 12-year-olds and 17-year-olds because they were watching American Bandstand or they were watching, you know, a Disney show or something. And they'd go to their parents and say, hey, I want one of these dolls or I want one of these hula hoops. And eventually, I'd like a Mustang. But marketing as we know it geared itself to young people because there was an idea, and the idea was is that people were going to make decisions about who they were between 15 and 25 that they would stick to for life. So this is the kind of toothpaste I use. I will always use it. This is the kind of car I'm going to drive. I will always drive that kind of car. These are the kinds of shoes I wear. I'll always wear those shoes. By the way, if any of that were true, I'd be wearing Tomacan shoes and, you know, still using English leather and, you know.
And driving an Oldsmobile.
It's ridiculous. And, you know, and there was also the belief, because that older generation at that time were very frugal, having grown up in the Depression. They weren't compelling consumers and very set in their ways. And so even if you watch TV tonight, if you read the reviews tomorrow, it'll talk about such and such program really won out with the sought-after youth demo. And so they believe that people over 50 are really not that appealing because they're not buying stuff. Excuse me, 70% of all the wealth in America is held by people over 50. They buy more cars than any other age group. They buy more software, more technology, more clothes, more travel, more health care, more prescription medications than any other age group. And guess what? Just like you began this program, the 60 or 70-year-old of today is not set in their ways. They're trying new things. They're trying to figure out where to go next and who to be next and what kind of home they want to live in and what's all this new tech. And so there's a blunder going on. By the way, it's made worse by the fact that the advertising industry is perhaps the most ageist industry in the country. Let me explain. The average age of people who work in the advertising industry in a management level job is 38. That's 10 years younger than just about every other industry. And the average age of all the creative directors in America, the people who are creating the images that make us feel kind of left behind if we're older, the average age is 28, and 89% of them are men. So wait a minute. Women over 50, your wife, my wife, are becoming the power consumer group in this country. To deny them, to disrespect them, to tell them that they've got to look like they're 25 or they're nobody, big mistake.
And so it's in this environment that we find ourselves as we are finding ourselves entering our second chapter. We're not preparing for it because nobody, our parents and our school teachers and our employers, didn't tell us to prepare. They didn't teach us to prepare or show us how to prepare. Nobody ever did it before. Our parents never had to deal with this issue. Our grandparents, great-grandparents, nobody had to deal with it before. So we didn't realize we had to either. And as a result of all of this, we are now finding ourselves on that precipice with no plan and no understanding of expectations or even of the opportunities that exist. 888-PLAN-RICK, rickedelman.com.
These callers are pre-recorded and pre-screened.